Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hi, Jordana.
Hi, Paige.
So I've been thinking about something and I've been wanting to chat with you about it. And that is the topic of like artistic devotion or creative devotion.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Like, you know how sometimes you'll see, observing from the outside, an artist who has just a real love and devotion for a particular subject or a project of some kind. And in the work, you can feel it.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love to see like certain people that I follow on Instagram. They are prolific with the amount of work they make. And there's one illustrator and she loves dogs.
Oh, yes.
And to see how her, like the character development of her illustrations over the last year, it started off a bit scrappy and it's gradually developed into these little individual characters that, you know, you start to recognize when they come up and you see the new ones that she's added. And yeah, the devotion she has to animals overall, but specifically dogs within illustration is really lovely to see that development in her work.
I bet. And like you can start to just see their little characters and the way she feels about them too.
I think it's like that artistic exploration, isn't it, when you know there's something that you're really interested in you and that you love. And once you start to, you know, research or get into that topic, you just don't know what might come of it. Yeah. It might be nothing, but when you love something that much, inevitably something wonderful, magical is going to come out of it, you know, when you peel back all those layers.
And you saying that makes me think, like, I wonder if devotion is in part spurred on or sourced in curiosity.
It must be. Yeah. That's the starting point, isn't it?
Yeah, like just what is this thing? And I want to know everything about it and I want to be near it and I want
to.
And I just find it really fascinating because, well, maybe I find it fascinating in part because I tend not to stick with one thing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So I was thinking, for example, about Frida Kahlo, who's such a great example of someone who explored the same subject over and over again from in various ways, from various perspectives, which was herself, right? Mm. Like explored the subject of herself by necessity because she was confined to bed so much of the time. But she did it in a way that was constantly evolving because she was evolving as a person. And I don't know, it just the way she brought a constant sense of freshness and curiosity and exploration and wonder to the topic of her own experience, you know?
Yeah.
It's really fascinating to me.
And it is, and I like what you just said there, is as much as your work evolves, you evolve too.
Yes.
And I don't think we necessarily think about that as artists. We're always focused on our work.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, how that matches what we have inside. Is a it's a reflection of what we're doing outside as well.
I think it's also such a testament to the fact that creativity is just inherently relational. You know, we're relating to our creativity itself. We're relating to the project that we're doing at any given time. We're relating to ourselves through the medium of the project. You know, there is this relational element to it that we don't often think about. But to me, feels so inherent to the experience of creating anything.
Yeah, it really does. And I think when we think about our guest today, I think that's one of the qualities that makes her work very magical and inviting, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So Lisa Knight is a photographer who has been living in Japan for about 4 years, and she is entirely self-taught, came to Japan and has really, I don't know about you, Jordana, but I genuinely feel like she has shown me sides of Japan and faces of Japan that I've never seen before, despite seeing like probably tens of thousands of images.
Yes.
In Tokyo, right?
Yeah, she does have an eye for capturing things that we might take for granted or just walk past in our everyday lives. She captures them and makes us be more aware of our surroundings, I think.
Yeah.
And the beauty that we can see in our everyday lives.
Yeah. And in this conversation, which is so such a fascinating conversation, she talks a bit about her one specific project where she spends a lot of time and energy and devotion, spending her creative energy and her just free time with the subjects that she wanted to portray. And I think you can really see it in the images that come out of that. So if you are interested in that kind of thing, I really encourage you to go ahead and listen to our conversation with Lisa. She is fascinating and lovely, and you're going to enjoy it.
And before you listen, I also highly recommend you go check her Instagram first. Yes. So that whilst we're going through the conversation, you can connect that to the photos that she's taken, so that you can have a visual to match the discussion.
Yeah, it's well worth the time. Her Instagram is at Lisa in Japan. Go take a look. Born in Sydney, Australia, self-taught photographer and videographer Lisa Knight now makes her home here in Tokyo, Japan. Through her work for Tokyo Weekender, Tokyo's longest-running English-language magazine, Lisa provides glimpses into life in the capital that reveal the pulsing aliveness of her subjects. But her lens isn't fixed solely on urban life. Through her photos, Lisa shares her travels both within Japan and abroad, and lets us see people, places, and interiors through her exquisitely rendered perspective. Whether she's sharing ethereal and riveting photos of natural beauty, or highlighting details that might otherwise go unnoticed, Lisa's work invites us to engage more sensitively with what we see. Thanks for being with us today, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me. I love that bio so much.
I had a lot of fun looking into your work and what you do, and I love your photos, and so it was easy.
So sweet. It's so interesting hearing other people write about my photography because I don't know how to explain my photography, so it's really nice to hear other people interpreting it.
Yeah. I'm so glad it resonates.
Yeah, it's so inspiring looking at your work, so I'm sure Paige with her word magic.
She's a magician.
She really is. Yeah. So Lisa, we start every episode with asking our guests the same question. So what is your first memory of doing something creative?
I love this question. Honestly, I think I was always a really creative kid. If I think back to my first experiences with being creative, I think it involved shiny stickers. I really loved buying and hoarding shiny stickers and then kind of just going crazy one day and putting them all over like an A4 sheet of paper. But I've always really loved drawing as well. But I was shocking at photography. I remember going on a year 3 school camp, and my dad gave me one of those like Kodak disposable cameras to take photos of the camp, and I came back and every photo was either blurry or just of my finger. So I was creative in different ways as a kid. I think I've always been quite playful, and I really believed in like fairies and energies and things like that, so I think I've always had that sense of playfulness, but initially, I think it was the stickers.
I love that. I love imagining little you, like, placing tears all over. And it's funny because like so much of your work now, it seems like part of what you notice very much is like light and reflections and how the light is in a space. And I wonder if those shiny stickers were interesting to you because of that light factor.
I really do think so. I think I've always, like, I guess just a bit of magpie energy. Like, I just love shiny, pretty things, and that includes light and the world around me. I think anything that's kind of like fantastical or whimsical, I'm just kind of inherently drawn towards. So I guess like that's where it all started.
Right. And there's so much of that here in Japan to
absolutely
catch your attention. Yeah. So will you tell us a bit more about how you came to photography and you know, what that path was for you?
Sure. So my photography path has not been linear whatsoever. So going back to after I graduated high school, I actually enrolled in university to do law and psychology. So I studied law and psychology for 5 years at university. And then I did another year of postgrad law study, and then I got a job in a bank, and I was working in the financial sector for a while. It was kind of like quasi-legal. It was dispute resolution. And this whole time I kind of, it's as though like all of that kind of like whimsy that I had as a kid just kind of disappeared, and I like really threw myself into like the corporate business world. Mm. So I was doing that for a long time, and my dream strangely was to be as a wills and estates lawyer, like when you like when someone dies and you sort out their will. Like like okay, pass Lisa. But then I kind of got to a point after working in the bank for a few years, and I was getting really close to being admitted as a solicitor in Victoria, when I kind of just had a bit of a brain snap, and I just decided I cannot do this anymore. Like, is this all there is to life? Wake up, go to work, get stressed out, go home, have Uber Eats and go to bed. Like, that's kind of what my life was. And so through a kind of really bizarre series of events, my husband and I decided to move to Japan, and it was in Japan that I just felt really inspired to start shooting. I think for two reasons. Firstly, Japan is incredibly inspiring just generally. Like, I'm seeing all these new things that I've never seen before, and also I didn't really have any friends here, so I was a little bit lonely. And when I feel, you know, I want to go out and explore, but I have no one to do it with, I feel a bit awkward. So I thought, well, if I have this kind of social buffer, having this camera with me, then I won't feel as weird because I'm doing something, I'm not just like aimlessly meandering by myself. So I started shooting that way, and then it really just started to snowball. I really resonated with photography when I saw myself improving. I really loved it. And then when COVID hit, I sort of saw it as an opportunity to kind of knuckle down and practice. It was kind of like this incubation period where I'm at home all the time and so is everybody else. I have this chance to really level up. So I just taught myself as much as possible, completely self-taught through YouTube. And then, you know, again, one thing led to another. I started sharing on Instagram. People started to see that. And then I was offered my job at Tokyo Weekender through Instagram, funnily enough.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. Mm. What was that like? Was that what was that moment like when you got that message?
Oh, it was full on. So in like the week prior, I just remember having this really strange feeling like something really big is about to happen, but I don't know what. And back then I was working at a childcare, basically. So I was teaching English to little children. And that job was kind of becoming a bit too exhausting for me. And I just remember thinking something's going to happen. And then, it was through a mutual connection that my now boss reached out to me and said, oh, what can we do to get you on board? And I was like, anything, I'm there.
Wow, that's really cool. And it sounds like, you know, in this story that you're telling, like one of the through lines is that your intuition, your sense of like, this isn't right, this is right, and something's going to happen. Like it has been guiding you the whole time. Mm.
Yeah, I think I've always had a sense of intuition, and when things don't feel right within me, it's quite, I can feel it quite heavily. And when things are going well, I can also feel it quite heavily as well. So I guess back in the bank, I just felt like things weren't aligning. I wasn't reaching my true potential. This isn't who I'm supposed to be. Who am I supposed to be? And so starting again in Japan around the age of 30 was really, really scary and a huge risk, because people, you know, have been growing their careers since their early 20s, and I'm just completely pivoting and starting again. It was incredibly scary, but it felt right, which is why I continued with it, just because it truly felt like the right thing to do. It wasn't anything kind of logical, just totally innate.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you can see through your work that the energy and the time that you've put into it by following what feels right to you has really paid off, it seems like. Yeah.
Making such a big move, that must have really taught you to trust your intuition.
Oh,
maybe. Completely.
Yeah. I think knowing that I just had this small feeling and then using that feeling to create this like brand new life for me was really empowering. Like, it made me realize that I could trust myself. I think all through your 20s, you don't really trust yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, life started at 30.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much around us that's encouraging us not to trust ourselves in our 20s, you know? And then I think as we get older, we realize things don't really feel great when I don't, you know? And there's more and more evidence that we build up as we mature that shows, like, it really feels a lot better when I do trust myself. Right. My life is more enjoyable. Yeah.
So Lisa, when you're doing your photography, so what draws you towards a specific subject when you're choosing what to photograph?
This is such a good question. You're full of such good questions. I don't know. So I think it's I think photography for me is fairly intuitive. I think, as I've probably expressed, I'm kind of an intuitive person. So I feel things rather than think about things, which sometimes isn't good because sometimes there's no thoughts in the brain. But generally I'm just led towards kind of stories and emotions and beautiful light and things that I feel reflect the way that I perceive the world. And it's really interesting to see all these photographers in Tokyo who take photos of different things with different styles. So I think this is where photography is so beautiful, is that it's kind of like this mirror. It shows people your internal interpretation of the world and how you view the world. And so for me, it's just totally intuitive. Like, I'm not thinking to myself, oh, you know, the rule of thirds is here and the, you know, Fibonacci sequence and the light is coming this way. Like, I'm not really thinking about that. It's all just, I'm just drawn to things.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Just listening to you talk about that. Yeah, that's inspiring. Like, so then it also makes me think about your relationship with the camera. Like, how do you feel like it's an extension of yourself? Like, how do you feel about your camera, you know, and the different ones that you use? Because that must obviously change the way that you work as well.
Oh, absolutely. Like, different cameras, I shoot different ways with different cameras. So the main camera that I use is a Nikon Z6. And for me, it's totally an extension of my body. I muscle memory, I can change the settings without even having to think about it, without even thinking about the light situation either. It just happens. But then I also have like a little point and shoot that I use for kind of more cheeky photography. Like, when I have my little Lumix, I'm looking for like absurd situations or kind of like strange daily life situations. And then I have a film camera, which has got that beautiful, like, nostalgic look. So when I have the film camera, I'm looking for something different as well. So I do think that while your style will kind of remain pretty, like, fairly the same across different cameras, it does kind of make you want to shoot a bit differently. But because I'm usually with my Nikon, and then I have a bunch of lenses as well that I use, And I definitely have favorite lenses.
You do, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've got my, the one that, you know, I've got my little cherished angel that I use for almost everything. And then I have the lens that I'm like, oh, you're just for video, whatever. Shush. Like,
they're like, oh, your little kids, like your little children or something.
Yeah, literally, exactly. Yeah. Hey, 40 mil F2, shush, sit over there. Don't talk.
Oh, that's so interesting, because like I do think it comes through in the photos, like what you are kind of leaning towards or what you're interested in.
Yeah.
In that, you know, and yeah, you do have this range that is beautiful and really interesting, where there's moments where there's a portrait of a person and you can feel like this person coming through in such a distinct way. And there's like just the energy of that. You know, I'm thinking specifically of some photos that you took, I think in Yoyogi, of the rockabilly.
Yeah.
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 Doing their thing, which is, I mean, anyone who has seen that remembers it like very clearly. It's such a thing that imprints on you, right? But their energy and their passion, their enthusiasm are so palpable. Yeah. And even I'll say, I've been here 20 years, and seeing them 20 years ago and seeing them now, they still have the same level of like excitement about what they're doing. It's beautiful. And then there's that contrasted with, you know, your nature photos, where it's almost like, I don't know, that feeling that you get when you walk into a church, like some of these photos, you know, where it's almost just quiet and soft and sacred and beautiful, you know, and these contrasting with each other, juxtaposed against each other. It's, I don't know, it's just really beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. That's exactly what I want to go for, is like this versatility across like different subjects that still retain that essence of emotion, I guess, or make people feel things. So in the case of like the rock and rollers of Yoyogi, like also I saw them 10 years ago. I was like, who are these people? They're incredible. I just think this is so interesting. I've never like been part of a group in my life. I've never really committed myself to this type of like subculture. Who are these people and why do they do it? I was so interested. So when I pitched it to Tokyo Weekender and they accepted it, I actually went and spent basically 3 months with them to get to know them. Because I think documentary photography, like you can tell when people are like maybe feeling uncomfortable with you in front of the camera, or, you know, there's not that connection. And so for this project, I really wanted people to feel that connection that I had with these people. And so I spent a lot of time with them, you know, almost every Sunday from March to May, you know, just getting to know them and shooting them when the vibes felt right. And so as a result, I mean, I took thousands of photos, and of those, I think there were like about 100 that I felt really showed their essence. And I think that's what I'm trying to capture, is the essence of the subject that I'm shooting. You know, it's easy to just rock up on a Sunday and just take a photo of them and walk off. And it might be, you know, like, it might, you know, be well lit and have beautiful composition, but I think people can feel the emotion in a photo as well. So that's really, really what I strive for. So now they're my friends, even though I don't really speak Japanese. We kind of just communicate with like punches to the arm and
Yeah, you find other ways to communicate other than language sometimes, hey?
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that you put the energy and effort into that relationship. And it does show. It really does show in the images and in the way that the comfort that they seem to have with you there. Because they are doing this thing in a very public way, right? There's dancing in a park for anyone outside of Japan who's never seen this, or outside of Tokyo who might not have seen it. It's they're performing, but they're also not. It's not for anybody but themselves at the same time. And so I think you really captured that element of it, the essence of it, as you say, that they're there for themselves, is how it feels in your photos, you know?
Yeah, that was really interesting to learn that this was their lifestyle. Like, they don't do this for money. They're not getting paid to do this. This is basically a second job that they have every Sunday, and they just come together through the love of rock and roll music and through dance. And I just find that really inspiring. I think we can learn a lot from that, from people who are just doing things for the love of it and not because it's going to lead to like any sort of like economic success or anything like that. So I felt really inspired by them.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's such a Tokyo experience also. And that makes me really interested in, like, again, to go back to the range of experiences and feelings that you convey through your photos, because you do get to travel quite a bit, it seems like, within Japan and also abroad. And I was curious how that influences the image the images you capture. Like, if you find that changing your geographical location shifts your perspective substantially, or how that relationship works for you.
Another absolutely stellar question. And yes, absolutely. I think that changing my geographic location impacts me quite significantly. I think it goes back to that kind of energy that I'm constantly feeling. So like in Japan, I feel a certain type of energy, or like when I went to Hanoi recently, I felt a different type of energy. And when I went back to Australia, again, totally different. Like the last year when I went back to Australia, it was one of the first times that I was shooting landscape, because having lived in Japan for a few years and then going back to Australia, I just saw it in this totally new light. So I started feeling really inspired by the beauty of countryside Australia. So I feel like I am impacted wherever I am, based on like the people that I meet, the culture of that particular place, the landscape. So in Japan especially, I'm really lucky to be able to go to like different prefectures with work. And again, I do feel as though my style does change according to wherever I am.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm feeling that, like, through the photos, and maybe that's where the question came from, like that there's a different perspective coming through when you're in a forest versus, yeah, when you're in Yoyogi Park or when you're in a building.
Yeah. It's almost like you're able to tap into the energy of that location and like visually give it to us with your photographs. Because I love the photos you did in Hanoi.
When I was shooting the rockabillies, I started shooting in black and white, which is very unlike me. But I felt just intuitively inspired to shoot the rock and rollers in black and white. And then so when I went to Hanoi, I also felt inspired to shoot in black and white, and but with quite sharp contrast, which is different because my photos are usually colorful and airy and have this kind of like sort of, I guess, like a dreamlike quality sometimes. So I'm kind of connecting with these two different sides of me, this kind of dreamy, airy type, and then also this like dark, gritty, juxtaposed kind of type. And I think that's just like inherent with like growing as a photographer. Like in the grand scheme of things, I'm pretty young to photography. Like I started it about 5 years ago. And so a lot of that was just like experimental. The first 3 years definitely was just totally experimental. Then you start to like find what you like and what you're drawn to. And then maybe you want to reach out and try something different because you were inspired by this photographer. And so I think this is still like a constant journey for me. Like, I think I'm at a point where I do feel like I just have a natural style, but I really want to try new things. And so that's the kind of phase that I'm in now, is this like, okay, I've got this foundation. How can I push this even further?
Right. I was curious too, like what, if your work with Tokyo Weekender, because you're doing both photography and videography, and I'm sure there are situations where you're doing something you wouldn't otherwise have done because you have an assignment of some kind. Like if that is helping you or encouraging you to grow in ways that are interesting to you.
Oh, absolutely. So over the past few years, I've been doing a lot of hotel photography, which is something that was quite unfamiliar to me for a while. And so having been thrown into this massive kind of intense hotel photography project, I have leveled up times 1,000 because I'm in this totally new situation and I just have to adapt. I have to figure it out. I have to have trust in myself. And for this project, I'm doing both video and photography. So even though it was extremely difficult at the start, I think without that challenge, I wouldn't be as technical as I am now. And having like the ability to understand photography on a technical level means that you can then express yourself a bit easier because you know what to change to, you know, make this light pop, or how to sort of compose the subject in a certain way to make it seem more like compelling. So yeah, I've had lots of projects that I wouldn't have been able to do without Tokyo Weekender, but as a result I'm a far better photographer.
That's really cool that you've gotten to do that. And as you say, like when you have that kind of that level of technical skill, it's also something you don't have to think about anymore.
Exactly.
You know, it's like when you're finally, when you're learning how to drive and you've reached that moment where you're like, oh, I know how to do this.
Exactly like that.
Yeah. Do you find that the technical side of it, do you feel that is a creative part of it as well? Or do you find that is just about studying and learning?
I think there's a balance. So I think there's like a point that you can learn up to that can help you control the creativity that you express in photography. And of course, like with video as well, you have to understand some concepts such as like shutter speed and frame rate and things like that so that you can get a video that looks good. But then I think there becomes a point where for me, I don't really need to be learning any more unless it's necessary. I think it's important to strike a balance between the technical aspect as well as kind of the like intuitive, emotional, artistic aspect of it. When you start to work in commercial photography, you do need to know technical things. You really do. And clients expect you to know that. But it's also useful to know so you can control the creative output of your photography. But there also comes a point where maybe you don't need to learn what exactly ISO is. You just need to know how it works.
Yeah. Mm. With your work, what are you hoping others will experience when they interact with your photography?
When people see my photography, I hope that they can realize that they can do anything that they want to do in their life, no matter what age they are. So I think my photography, I want them to understand the story behind it, which is that I completely changed my life, you know, around my 30s. And that just through hard work and through patience and through a lot of practice, you can do anything that you want, especially through the power of social media as well. You're not confined to the life that you're living now. There are ways, you know, that you can live a different life if that's what you want. And even though the steps might be really, really, really small, just start taking them slowly. Like my husband says to me, how do you eat an elephant? I don't know. I don't endorse eating elephants. But, you know, one bite at a time, just one little bite at a time. And so I hope that people see that 5 years ago I didn't know how to use a camera. I had absolutely no idea what aperture was. No idea. And now I'm, you know, working full time as a photographer, and I'm not anyone special. All I did was I just put in the work and practiced a lot and then just created a strategy and just worked towards it.
And you also shared so generously.
Yes.
And it sounds like the sharing was a big part of what led to this opening for you.
I totally think so. Like, I think that I really believe in good karma. I think that whatever you send out into the universe sort of comes back to you. But I'm not making, you know, these free resources because I expect anything to come to me. I just feel so grateful that I was given this opportunity, that kind of the least I can do is help others with that. And then I feel as though I feel very strongly about collaboration over competition. Yes. I feel very strongly about community. I think that people can actually band together and grow stronger together rather than in isolation. So I want to create a community of people, and I want people to also have that mindset because that's how you live the life you want to live, not through trying to compete with others, because that's, you know, like a scarcity mindset. You're just going to diminish yourself even more. Work together and grow together.
Oh, you're speaking our language. That's exactly how Paige and I feel as well. It's good.
And I think we're coming to that more in general with people understanding that we can do so much, and it can feel so much better when we're collaborating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it just opens up your brain to another perspective, and you go routes that you would never probably have gone if you just stayed by yourself. Hey.
Exactly. So, I really like the Tokyo photography community because everybody's really friendly, and even if you're doing the same type of photography, you kind of work together. And you know, back in the day when I was shooting portraits, you'd almost like share clients, like, oh, I can't take this day, do you want it? And then the same will happen back to you. So it's, you know, you're kind of just sharing, and it doesn't mean that you're earning any less or you're becoming any less popular than this person. You're genuinely growing together, and you actually make more money together. So I think that was really, I'm really grateful to a handful of photographers who were very kind to me at the beginning and helped me kind of create this mindset of community.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I think there's also really something to the community that exists in Tokyo overall among people who have been raised elsewhere, you know, and we come here, and Japan is not the easiest place to blend into or to be, you know, sometimes it's challenging, and everyday life can be challenging. And I think we all share the commonality of that, and we recognize in each other the fortitude and the grit that it takes to live a life abroad and to do that in a place that may be very different from where you come from. And I think that leads to a lot of connection and community for us that I really value personally.
I really agree with that. Living in Tokyo is really hard. And so, again, like, because it's so difficult, you almost have to have this community of people who will help you through it. And then you just pay on the favor later. So when you learn about what on earth healthcare and pension is and how to sign up to it, then, you know, you can help someone who's new. And I just find that kind of community so powerful. And I totally agree that the importance of community becomes even stronger in a place like this, where it is hard to do it alone. And it does feel like you're kind of trauma bonding with everybody.
Yes, it is completely that, isn't it?
And then there's the joy too. Like, we have this trauma bond, and then we're also like, wow, look at that. You know? Oh my God, look at that. Have you ever seen that before? Like, there's the excitement of the just magical, mysterious wonder of being in a place like this, where people are doing creative things all the time. And this is what has kept me in Tokyo, and I think might keep me in Tokyo for a very long time to come, that I just can't get enough of the creativity here that's just everywhere.
Yeah.
All the time. And we get to marvel at that together, and we get to enjoy that together. And for me, that's the beautiful flip side of that trauma bond.
Totally. I feel like Tokyo, you have to work for it. At the start, it's really hard. You're working through all these kind of dilemmas that kind of pop up in your life every couple of days, or then it slowly becomes every couple of weeks, then it becomes every couple of months, and then it becomes so easy to live here. It's kind of like you have to get through that hard part at the start. It's kind of like Tokyo's testing you. Are you really welcome here? Are you really gonna like it here? And then you get sort of given these treasures by Japan.
You put in the work, here you go.
Totally otaku.
When I first came, I was like, as long as I can get through the first 3 months, just 3 months, and then after that it was just a joy of, like, experiencing this city is just something else. You never get bored here, hey?
Never. Oh, never.
So, Lisa, what's a project that's exciting you these days? What's something that you feel interested in?
Ooh, this is a very good question, because I am currently planning an exhibition that I'll be holding in starting around the middle of February next year. It'll be held in Nakameguro at a friend's gallery, and it will actually be a fine art exhibition. So it's not going to be street. It's not going to be anything that you've seen from me before. It'll be something totally, totally new, which is kind of scary because I'm still figuring out how to do it. So at the moment, I'm planning for that fine art exhibition. I'll share more information maybe in like a month or two about it, but please come to it. It's going to be really fun. Yes.
Oh, so yeah, that sounds really interesting. So what inspired you to do this?
So I have a really great friend here who I met through this very serendipitous chain of events, and her name is Mayuli. And Mayuli owns a jewelry company. She's extremely accomplished. She's had her company for like 30 years or something. She's lived in Paris. She's just amazing. And so she actually asked me if I would like to exhibit at her jewelry gallery. But she said that I had complete free range as to like what I wanted to exhibit there. And through another strange series of, she connected me with an Australian woman who used to work at an art gallery, actually the NGV, the biggest art gallery in Victoria. And she's been kind of mentoring me on this sort of new style of fine art that I want to do. And so it's just been a bit of a collaboration of sorts, and I've gone through some mentoring and coaching as to what it means to move away from commercial photography and more into this kind of more conceptual type of photography, which is, like I was mentioning earlier, like I'm ready to kind of challenge myself with new things now and things that people haven't seen from me before and that it might be unexpected. So that's what I'm working on now, and it's really hard.
Often when we're doing those new, you know, stepping into a new area of our work, it feels hard, doesn't it? You have to kind of work your way through those things in order to get to the good bits at the other side.
Totally. That's exactly, I've been thinking about this exhibition for a long time now, what I wanted to do. Should I do something that people expect from me that I know would like perform well, or should I do something totally wild? And I thought, oh, let's just go wild with it.
Yeah, that's always the best way, I think, isn't it? You're not going to regret if you go the total wild way. Whereas if you played it safe, you might have think, oh, maybe I should have, hey.
Yeah, I think I've always liked to push the envelope a little bit. My husband agrees with that too.
I like, it's working for you. it's taking you to some really interesting places. Yeah. Pushing you in your comfort zone.
Yeah, I'm luckily, I feel quite comfortable leaving my comfort zone, and I feel that having this like body of work behind me that, you know, I've created over the past sort of 3 years, I feel comfortable with that. And people know that's what I do, but I think it is time to just start kind of pushing it a little bit further, seeing where I can go with it. It's all fun. It's all experiment, isn't it?
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah. I can't wait to see. Yeah. Keep an eye out on your Instagram for that one. So Lisa, when you're thinking about this project and what have you, when you find yourself outside of your like usual creative flow, what kind of things help you to get back to where you want to be, or guide yourself back to where you feel comfortable?
This is such a great question. You guys are full of good questions. Honestly, the best thing you can do when you're not feeling creative is to not do creative things. Just do something else. Just watch TV, maybe, I don't know, watch a YouTube video. Kind of just step away from trying to force yourself to get back into a creative flow, because forcing yourself will absolutely do the extreme opposite. It will send you back. So when I'm feeling like, oh, I don't really like my camera today, I've been using my camera too much lately, I'm annoyed, I don't feel creative, or I had this kind of like this project that I'm not really like connecting with very well, I'll just like hang out with friends, hang out with my husband, go get some ramen, maybe like tinker around at home. I started cross stitching. I kind of haven't done that in a while, but I'll just do something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like eventually something, as long as you don't force it, eventually you'll get a burst of inspiration when you least expect it, and then you get back into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I could not agree more with what you're saying about forcing. And I think that's something that when people become really intractably in a place where they can't move forward, it's often because they've been trying to force themselves, you know, and that it just, you're right, it does the opposite of what we want. And it creates this like wheel tires in the mud kind of situation.
Totally.
You're not going anywhere for a while until you can, go do something else.
Yeah.
Have some
fun. I feel like it's the universe saying like, slow down, stop, don't do it, put it down, go play outside.
Yes. Totally. Oh, thank you so much for being with us today, Lisa. It's just been such a joy talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so sorry that I talk so much, but I'm really excited.
Don't apologize for talking too much. Just, we embrace that here.
So we've been talking quite a bit about your online presence. And so where can people find you online?
So at the moment, I can only be found in one place. It's just Instagram, Lisa in Japan. Also, if you want to check out Tokyo Weekender, you can see my photos here and there. Jump on my Instagram. I'm sharing some free resources about how to start photography as a beginner, if you wanted to check that out.
Awesome. People could not have a better teacher for that.
Yes.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
Now it's time for our Ask Us Anything section. This is when we read a question that's sent in by one of our lovely listeners. So Paige, can you tell us what's today's question?
Yes, today's question comes from Mary in Nagasaki. And the question is, how does a ritual play a part in your creativity? And I love this question.
What do you do, Paige?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about it just before we started recording, and I was thinking, it changes for me all the time. Like, what I really like about, and I often think of it as a rhythm, or it could be a ritual too, but for me, it changes so much based on what I feel I need at that time, you know? So right now, what is resonant for me is, like a kind of centering, you know, like a centering of just remembering, coming back to my own sense of self in the moment. You know, I'm working on a really big writing project right now. And I don't know. What I've noticed in my pattern is that at the beginning, I have a lot of momentum. And then I start to imagine other people's voices. Like, what might this person say? What might that person say? the anxiety that starts to come in.
Yeah.
And it's just not helpful, you know, like that way of thinking is a safety mechanism. You know, it's my mind trying to protect me. And that's beautiful. Thank you, mind.
Mm.
And also, it's not going to help me write.
yeah.
So what has been helpful for me recently when I come up against that is, really centering and coming back to, like, I've been really working with this idea of calling your own power back, you know? So when I'm thinking about other people and how they're going to react, I'm giving my power away, right?
Mm.
I'm putting that in somebody else's basket. You know, and it's kind of ingenious, because if I do that, it kind of gives me an excuse not to do the thing. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's very it's a clever little mechanism, but it really does keep me from doing the thing I want to do. So it's not efficient or effective in the long run. So when I, pull my attention and my energy and my power back to myself, and I remember, like, I know who I am. I know what my values are. I know what I want. I know what I want to convey with my writing. I know what I want to convey with my overall creative work in the world. that really helps me sink into the space I need to be in to make whatever it is I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is that something you do like before you start, or is it something you do like as you feel things coming up that aren't comfortable for you?
I've generally started to do it before I start. Actually, you know what I do even before that is I, it's going to sound silly, but it's really, really helpful. You know that I used to work as a massage therapist. I was a professional massage therapist many years ago, but I learned a lot about the body and how the body works in that time. And what I discovered about myself is that my body holds a lot of excess energy when I'm feeling keyed up, right? I think that's true for most of us. So I shake, like I literally like shake my body out, you know, shake the energy out. And from that point, when my body is physically releasing, has physically released, then I can do the kind of centering thing. It takes like 2 minutes. It's not about a long process, but yeah, that's what it's been for me recently. It changes all the time. But so if you ask me a month from now, it'll probably be different. But...
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure different seasons as well. Our bodies feel different, don't they?
Yeah.
So you could probably adjust depending on, yeah, how the seasons are.
Exactly. Going. How about you?
Yeah, for me, I think it depends what I'm working on. Like some of my work I feel is like purely intuitive. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what I'm going to be making before I start. It's just a thought in my head about a topic that I'm interested in or what have you. So if I'm doing that type of work, I will do things that are a bit more maybe spiritual, shall we say. I'll light a candle and just kind of meditate on the flame, or I will pull a tarot card or oracle card, like something to get me centered. Same with you, really. Something to get me centered with my thoughts and connected to my feelings and calm my mind. So I find doing those two things really helps to calm my mind and allow me to focus on what I want to do that or create that day. If it's something, and it depends how my morning's gone as well. Sometimes I might like read for like 10, 15 minutes, a book or a magazine, before I start doing anything. That's often a really good transitional activity for me because, you know, most mums, the mornings are just kind of crazy. So it can be hard to transition from the go, go, go of the morning to kind of more peaceful, creative time. Reading really helps me to do that. And if it's something that I'm doing that's just kind of more fun, that I'm not really thinking too much about, then to be honest, I just have a little tidy up. My desk, I get my desk in order, I look at my paints and kind of ponder on what I fancy using, what color scheme, what have you. And then I get started that way. So yeah, reading, candles or meditation, or a little bit of tidying up and my kind of rituals, pre-creative work rituals, I'd say.
Lovely. Yeah. I think tidying up is so, I don't know, it clears things more than just physically.
It really does. Yeah. You know, I use the procrastinating cleanings, you know, that phrase came from somewhere. Because it does, it helps you to get into the right frame of mind to tackle whatever it is, you know, or start whatever it is you want to do. Hey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's sometimes where it really does. It's like, okay, I just needed to do that. I just needed to have, because the other thing I think it accomplishes is that it shows you like, look, you did a thing. You can see it.
Yes. You know? Yep, exactly. Yeah.
It kind of builds a little bit of confidence of like, okay, I can do things.
Working down, now I can get on with the fun stuff. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, this is a great question. Thank you, Mary, so much for this one. And yeah, we'd love to hear your questions. So please feel free to write to us or let us know if you have some for us. We really loved getting them and we love answering them too. How can people do that, Jo?
You can email us at thecreativitycafe21@gmail.com, or you can send us a DM on Instagram, also at thecreativitycafe21. And we always check and we're always reading them, so don't be shy.
Don't be shy. We love to hear from you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
If you like the Creativity Cafe podcast, please subscribe and share it with other people who you think might like it too. Subscribing means that you never miss an episode, which means that we get to share all of these delightful conversations with you, knowing you'll get to hear every single one. You can subscribe by going to the show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then just tapping on the plus sign or clicking on follow. It really helps the pod for you to do that. While you're there, if you'd be willing to leave us a rating and a review, we would love to have that too. We love to read what you think and hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings about the Creativity Cafe podcast. So please do go and leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everyone.